Live from Texas, it's John Mayo with the Mayo Report.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comics for April 2008 through Diamond. This does not include newsstand, mass market sales, or anything outside of Diamond, or oddly enough, anything beyond the top 300. So this isn't a complete picture of, you know, an all-inclusive picture of every comic that's sold during the month, but it seems to cover the lion's share of it, and certainly covers that towards comic book stores, where I think everyone would pretty much agree that's where the hardcore habitual readers of comics are to be found and where they're buying their comics. So, Bob, you know, once again, Marvel came out on top. No surprise. Like we talked about last month, we were expecting them to do about 50%, and they pretty much did. They had 49.34% of the units for the top 300 comics, and 50.29% of the dollars for the top 300.
So they just snaked over in the dollar category.
Yeah.
We're so near and yet so far in total units.
Well, I mean, any time one publisher comes that close to half, I mean, it's within, you know, a percent of it. You know, that's really good for that publisher, but I am not convinced that's really good for, you know, everybody else as a whole. And I don't mean the other publishers. I mean even us as a reader. Because if something were to happen to Marvel, and, you know, there was that one time it was, you know, it nearly went bankrupt, with that big of a percentage of the top-selling items, that could cause a huge ripple effect in the industry.
That's true.
Now, fortunately, Marvel seems to be in pretty solid shape these days, both in terms of how their publishing's doing, how their movie and licensing stuff is doing. So, you know, there's no real cause for alarm there. But, you know, all other things being equal, I think we were better off in the days when there was a better split of the top-selling comics across different publishers.
Well, Marvel certainly blew the doors off it with the number one item this month.
Oh, yeah. Before we get to that, though, let's talk about DC, because I think we're going to wind up talking about that with what isn't the number one item. DC came in a fairly distant second this time around with 32.45% of the units for the top 300 and 30.85% of the dollars for the top 300. Now, in terms of the dollar share, that's nearly 20% behind. In terms of the unit share, that's only about 17% behind. But, you know, when we look at that top-selling item that you were just mentioning, Secret Invasion number one, which, I mean, nobody should be shocked that's the top-selling item. What is very interesting and very telling is that it sold over 250,000 units. Now, it's not often we can actually use the word million when we have these discussions, Bob, other than for the aggregate of all the top 300. And certainly not that often for any particular item. Now, granted, it's only 250,000. It's still 250,000. This isn't quite Civil War numbers. I'd have to double check, but I'm pretty sure it exceeded World War Hulk, or is in that ballpark. But it's not that far from the Civil War numbers either. This is another smash success for Marvel. You know, they're doing really well with their events, and if at this point they're not planning their next one, I would, you know, they have to be. Why on earth wouldn't they be? You know, everyone they've done for the last 2-3 years has been knocking it out of the park. They're going to keep going with that.
Yeah, I'm just hoping, you know, if they can actually stay on time and on schedule with this, that was the one big black eye to Civil War. I mean, if Civil War had come out in the 7 months as planned instead of stretching out over a year or more, it would have just been so smooth. This one has every indication that if they can just keep their ship on course and get these issues coming out in a timely fashion, this will firmly entrench them. I mean, they're having some really nice crossovers to it. They're not Red Sky kind of crossovers. They're pretty decent crossovers, pretty good stories, the whole thing. Marvel could really take a stranglehold on this top slot coming out of this event.
Well, I think it's safe money that they're going to have the top slot for every month that Secret Invasion comes out. Now, hopefully that is the next 6 months. If not, they may miss a month or two and maybe have it with something else. But their track record on events is a lot stronger than DC's. You know, we've got Final Crisis coming up. I think that will do well. But, you look at how Infinite Crisis did compared to Civil War, Civil War dominated it in terms of sales, you know. And then what I find very disturbing about this month's numbers is the number 9 slot, and that's Justice League of America number 20. And that's the top-selling item for DC. That's the only item DC had in the top 10. It's one of two in the top 15. And, I mean, really, it's there's not much near the top of the list for DC. But what's really alarming about that Justice League issue is it sold 85,785 units. That's a little over a third of what Secret Invasion did. I mean, there is such a huge difference between Marvel's top-selling item and DC's. Now, granted, Marvel's is a major event. DC's is just another issue of Justice League. It'll be a kind of a more fair comparison once we get that Final Crisis issue out next month, or in the next set of numbers or whatever. But to see DC not having a single item over 86,000 units is not a good sign.
I mean, they barely snuck into the top 10 with this.
Yeah, I mean,
number 9.
Well, and number 10 was only, what, 50, 60 units behind it?
Yeah.
They could have very easily lost that slot and been pushed out. So, well, actually, they would have had to go below Buffy, which was in slot 11, which had 83,559.
They were in by 2,200 units, but still, you know, this is the kind of thing where, you know, you talk about the diamond numbers. I've got to believe that Buffy is something that's going to sell a lot stronger in markets that are not covered by the diamond numbers than Justice League. So in all actuality, Buffy could very well have sold more copies.
Well, the other thing is Buffy has a strong history of reorder activity. In this month, there were a few other issues down lower in the charts for Buffy that had reorders. Yeah, issues 6 and 7, and that's going back a little ways, had over 4,800 units of reorder each. Not only is Buffy going to do fairly well in the mass market, like you're saying, it seems to have a longer shelf life in the direct market than Justice League tends to. So I don't think any of the previous issues of Justice League have any reorder activity this month, but let's take a look for that real quick. And no, issue 10, of all things, has reorder activity of 4,225 down at rank 271. What happened in that issue? Why is that getting reorder activity? That was the final chapter of Lightning Saga. Interesting. I would not have expected that. There's some really kind of puzzling reorder, not puzzling, but unusual reorder activity this month, because another one for DC that was reordered, which really surprised me that was on the list, was down at 277. Flash Fastest Man Alive number 13 with almost 4,100 units. And I mean, given what's going on with DC Universe Zero, both of those two issues, that Justice League number 10 and that Flash 13, kind of make sense. But it's not often you see something from a year or so back making the list.
Right. That is kind of weird.
But kudos for DC for having them available for reorders for people who wanted them. You know, you look at the other things for DC near the top of its list. It's got, obviously, Justice League was that top one. Justice Society in rank 13 with 80,487. That seems to be doing pretty well with Geoff Johns writing that. The first issue of Titans was in rank 17 with 75,565, which these days is a fairly good starting point for a title, but given that this is the new Teen Titans lineup coming back, a little bit, I don't want to say disappointing or lackluster, but I think that lineup of characters had the potential of breaking the 100,000 mark. Perhaps not with that creative team, but I think that was potentially a missed opportunity for DC.
Right.
And then what's also, again, a little unusual, but kind of mirrored what happened with 52, is we've got the last four issues of Countdown. But normally it would have been the highest number than, you know, the others in chronological order going down the chart. This time we saw that it was actually climbing in sales from issue 4 to 3 to 2 to 1. And we saw that kind of a minor upswing at the end of 52. Now with 52, it was the whole World War III mini event inside of the event. that kind of did that. Here, I think it was retailers kind of expecting things to kick into high gear leading up to Final Crisis. And if I had to guess, I would think there's potentially quite a few of these still sitting on store shelves.
Right.
The other one that was in the top 20 for DC, although Countdown to Final Crisis goes down to rank 23, but in rank 20 was Batman 675. So really, you've got kind of a couple of their core properties with Justice League, Justice Society, Titans, and Batman up near the top of the list, Green Lantern in rank 25. But, you know, even with Green Lantern, you're down at the 65,331 unit mark, whereas with Batman, it's still at the 71,120 units. You know, now that Final Crisis is over, they're not going to have the four issues for next month, because I think they were skipping a month before Trinity kicks in. And it'll be curious to see how Trinity does in terms of, one, does it follow the same sales curve as Countdown and 52? And there's plenty of reason to think it may not. It's a very different structured story with a shorter lead feature and bigger backup features. And it's got Kurt Busiek and Mark Bagley as the creative team for that front story for the entire run. And that's a solid creative team. So, you know.
Yeah, but when's the first issue that's supposed to ship? June or July?
I was thinking they were only taking 1 month off because they've already solicited the first nine or something.
So these are April numbers, so we'll at least not have any indication on the May numbers.
Right.
So we might see it in the June numbers. But realistically, when you look at how Brave and Bold has been doing, as a for instance, those, you know, Mark Waid and George Perez were supposed to be hotshot creators, but that title was not blowing the doors off anything.
Well, with issue 12, it's down at rank 54 with 37,729 units. And
so,
yeah, that one dropped pretty hard.
So I'm just curious on the Trinity, you know, is the weekly fatigue going to really be coming into play? Because we had a big drop off from 52 to Countdown. Are a bunch of people going to jump off? Well, I guess what you're really going to get out of it is you're going to find out how many hardcore DC fans there are.
Well,
because the number should track with the hardcore DC fans.
I think it's a safe bet that it'll start lower than Countdown did, just like Countdown started lower than 52. I'm kind of expecting it to follow the same basic sales curve where we see a bit of a drop off during the first couple of months, then presuming those are returnable issues like they were for Countdown and 52, and they may not be. I don't know either way. If it is, then we'll see what looks to be a jump for that kind of 13th issue or so when the returnability kind of, you know, kicks out or what have you, and then kind of following the same slow slope down that again, Countdown and 52 did. But just like Countdown had a narrower gap between the high-selling and low-selling issues in terms of percentage of overall for the top-selling and stuff than 52 did, I expect we may see that for Trinity as well, if it follows the same basic pattern. In other words, 52 had a lot of shakeout of readers. A lot of those got just kind of, you know, either tired of the weekly grind, or it was good for 1 year but didn't want to invest in another, so they skipped Countdown. It had a bit of a shakeout, but not as much as 52 did, because, again, a lot of those people just didn't get on board to begin with. So while we may start lower, I think it may do better in retaining its initial sales than Countdown did. But, again, the difference in story size for the front story and the back story, you know, it could go either way. I mean, it could go in a completely different sales direction. And while I think there is that weekly fatigue, I do think that having the book out each and every week helps it maintain momentum, and that's something I think a lot of other titles are having a very hard time with. I mean, going back to your comment about Civil War and how when it went off the rails, you know, it suffered because of you know, losing momentum. That's something we have not seen with Countdown and 52, and I don't think we'll see with Trinity.
Let's talk about the final few issues of Countdown, as long as we've got them here on the list in slots 21 through or
21, 21 through, 22 and 23.
Yeah. Interestingly, you know, the number one, the last issue of Countdown actually came in up at the top. And actually you had a flip of the normal pattern, because usually it goes down with each successive issue, and here they went in reverse order. Number one had the most, number two, then three, then four.
Well, and again, we saw that kind of upswing near the end with 52. We've also seen this from time to time on other titles, like at the end of Strangers in Paradise and things like that, where people who were presumably marginally interested in the title but not enough to get it every month kind of want to know how the story ends. You know, that's the only theory I've got for why we saw a bit of an increase on at the end of various titles. Now, in this
right.
particular case, early on in the run, I was expecting to see an upkick at the end, because it was, in theory, going to kick into high gear and kind of really, you know, launch Final Crisis. Well, you could argue whether that happened or not, but, you know, sight unseen, I think the retailers ordered as if it was going to, and I can't really fault them for that.
I guess the point I was going to make is, when we talked about it, seeing as how the number one issue was really anticlimactic after issue number two, and people who were just getting that number one issue, boy, that was a real feeble closeout to that whole series, but kind of par for the course for the whole series.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it sold better than 2 through 21 did.
Oh, sure. Yeah, well, it was ordered by stores better than
well,
2
that's,
through 21.
That's fair. That's true. It's easy to fall into the assumption that stores are ordering that what people are going to read, and in some cases they are, some cases they're not. Certainly at the top of the list, there's probably a bigger delta between what the stores get in and what they're able to get their customers to buy. I think as we get further down on the bottom, in a lot of cases they're ordering a lot tighter, but also, you know, an issue or two at each store sitting on store shelves can add up percentage-wise pretty big at that bottom end of the spectrum.
Right.
Now, what's interesting is you were talking about Brave and the Bold and how that's gone down quite a bit. A few slots below that is Booster Gold, which I thought launched reasonably well out of 52. And with issue 8, it's down at rank 57, down just below 36,000 units with 35,972. And, you know, it seems like even when they have something that, you know, starts well, gets reasonably well received, the sales just don't stick around. I mean, this is down about 22,000 from where it started, you know. And it started with you know, I would say potentially sustainable numbers, 57,807 units. You know, it's not one of these that launched so high like Flash, Fastest Man Alive, and Wonder Woman, where I didn't think there was any way they could stay at that level because they were at the 100,000 plus. You know, 57,58,000, that's doable. You know, and now it's, again, it's not doing it. But, you know, that's not too big of a surprise. It's, you know, safe money that on any given title that the next issue is going to sell less, barring any event, crossover, new creative team, or other sales stunt, alternate covers, that sort of thing.
Let's see what else we've got here. Oh, you know, the other thing is, you know, them coming in mostly down in the 20s on the list, that's a little lower than they had been in the past. They had been in the teens for a good portion, hadn't they been?
Well, you've also got to figure, though, this is a kind of a higher level list, if you will, in terms of the average sales, because the bottom of this list is at 2,959 units, which is a lot higher than it usually is. You
mm-hmm.
know, I think a lot of things got pushed down a couple of ranks by Secret Invasion, by the bump that it gave to New Avengers and Mighty Avengers, and, you know, things of that nature. And ironically enough, one of the other things that bumped it down was Titans. And of course, you know, on that next issue, it's going to drop just because that seems par for the course. You know, figure a potentially 20% drop on that is historically what seems to happen between first and second issues.
Yeah, at a minimum.
Yeah. Although every once in a while, there's some real weird anomalies, which is hard to tell if they're actual sales anomalies or just reporting anomalies at Diamond. Because in rank 29, we've got Cable number 2 with 59,862 units. And at rank 24, we have Cable number 1 with 65,551 units. Now, the anomaly there isn't that there's a very minor gap between those two issues. The anomaly is that Cable number 1 was listed at all on here. because it was on
calling it a reorder, and that's really insanely high if it's a reorder.
Well, it matched what it seemed to have last month within a few hundred. So I don't know
if that's data anomaly.
I'm thinking so, because it's highly unusual for, you know, an issue to have reorders roughly equal to what it did during its first month.
Right. Did you send an email to Diamond about that?
No, I haven't done that yet. I probably should. I just saw that, and it's like, that's weird.
Yeah, that is really weird.
But the thing that's also funny in terms of the reorder stuff is if you look at rank 45 with Angel After the Fall number 6, which is the second highest indie title, or non-Marvel and DC, I should say, at least, behind Buffy. Issue 6 had, quote-unquote, reorders of 46,633 units. Now, what happened was last month it had some orders that somehow got into the March numbers that probably should not have. And we also see that this month with issue, I think it's 7, down near the bottom of the list. Let me see if I can find that real quick. Yeah, if you look down at rank 263, Angel After the Fall number 7 shows up with 4,402 units, and that probably should go into the May numbers. So there are a couple of things that, with working with this data, you've just got to realize that it's not 100% clean data, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that just gets to be a little bit of a pain when trying to crunch the numbers every month, because there's oddities that it's hard to tell, is that, again, what the sales really are doing, or is it just something not quite right in the way Diamond's reporting the numbers? And without visibility inside to Diamond, there's no way to know for sure. You know, the question, like with that cable, is the numbers this month correct and last month's wrong? You know, should last month's have been thrown out? I mean, it's hard to say. Actually, not hard to say. It's impossible to say.
Well, I mean, realistically, when did cable number one ship? I mean, it didn't ship.
Well, the issue isn't when did it ship. The issue is what did it sell when it shipped.
Right.
You know.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you have about 65,000 on the March numbers and the April numbers, did it really sell 130,000 copies? That's the real.
Well, I would say most likely no way in hell.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, it just seems like okay, anomalous data. And
yeah,
I'm guessing that it'd be the second month that was the duplicate.
Yeah, I would think so too, but it could be that they had to correct the data and last month's was wrong and this is the right number, or this is duplicate and last month's was right. I mean, it's a mess. It's not often they make this kind of a mistake, but it's not unusual for a mistake to get made, you know, a time or two a year or what have you. January of this year, I think, was the best example of that, where there were some serious problems and they had to send out a revised version of the list.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look down at rank 149 and 160, we've got the first issues of Hercules at 149 and the first issue of Calibre at 160. Both of those from Radical Comics. Both of those had a $1 promotional price point and sold fairly well. Hercules seemed to do 12,147 units, and Calibre did, 10,711 units. And no doubt the $1 price point helped on that, and these had at least two or three different covers. Two for Hercules, I think, and three for Calibre.
Correct.
And for a publisher, you know, just starting out to place, you know, kind of, you know, at the halfway point for sales and above some DC titles, that's a good start. And I kind of think that the initial numbers for a publisher are very important, in so much as that sets the bar for what retailers are kind of going to expect future both issues of those titles and other titles to do. I think one of the things we saw with Virgin is, by and large, a lot of their stuff tends to be down kind of lower in the list because of their initial offerings not really kind of matching what the North American audience, you know, seemed to want. As they've brought out some stuff that has been a closer match to that, they've started to get out of that, 6,000 unit range and started to do, like well over twice that on some of their titles. You know, that's one where I think if they had started with titles more like Dan Dare and others that seem to have clicked better with the North American audience, that might have helped them sell some of those other titles if they'd come out later.
But, who knows how they're doing overseas.
True.
With that stuff, and we have no real easy way of finding that out.
Yeah, because with Virgin, we're kind of the secondary market, and they're targeting India as the primary market. And I haven't heard anything lately on how they're doing. Initially, I'd heard that some of their stuff was doing, fairly well over there. I forget the exact numbers, but at least 10, 20,000 units. I'm also curious what the price point is and the production quality in terms of the paper and the cardstock cover or what have you over in India. You know, I'm curious if they're going for more of a newsprint quality, in other words, what we had back in, say, the 70s and 80s, or early 80s at least, compared to the glossy paper and nice production values we have these days.
Since we're down at the bottom of the list here now, I'm looking at things that are falling into the "wow, it's a shame this book is so far down the list" category. I think ones that stand out to me are Suburban Glamour. I really liked that series.
I haven't read Wild Guard Insider number one yet, but
yeah,
based on the previous Wild Guard stuff, I'm a little disappointed that sold, under 3,000 units at that $29.59 mark. That's less than a copy per store, depending how many stores there are out there. But the number that gets bandied about is usually 3,500, although I don't know how accurate that is.
Again, as we kind of point out each month, just totally unscientific, but given that I step into a whole bunch of different comic shops in a given month and probably half of them don't carry the smaller indie books at all, I'm kind of guessing that that's kind of a pattern, and we're having the few stores that are very indie friendly kind of taking up the slack here on a lot of these books.
Well, I mean, if you filter the list of the top 300 here and take out Marvel and DC, the only things that are above rank 100 are from Image, Dark Horse, Dynamite with the Boys and Project Superpowers, and IDW, Angel After the Fall. So if you take out Dark Horse and Image, which are also in the front half of the catalog, you start to have very little above that 150 rank. It shows just how little penetration a lot of these titles have into the marketplace. Aside from Angel After the Fall, Project Superpowers, and The Boys, Glamour Puss, number one, is the highest selling thing, and that only did 16,514 units. And I can almost guarantee it's not going to do that for a second issue.
I love Dave Sim, but this is a very experimental book, and after getting that number one issue, I am going to guess that only the most hardcore Dave Sim fans are going to be back for the second issue. I suspect that book is going to 16,000 for number one. I'd be surprised if it does over five for number two.
Yeah, I'm expecting we're going to see a very harsh drop off on that one, just because the audience may not know what to make of it. And, I mean, there's how many of these? Let's see. Again, out of the back half of previews, we've only got 19 items that sold over 10,000 units. And out of that, there's another 28 that sold between 5,000 and 10,000 units. And then the final part is 25, I should say, that sold between 3,000 and 5,000 units. So, I mean, once you take out Marvel, DC, Image, and Dark Horse, you're only talking about 72 items on the list. Those companies, mainly Marvel and DC, really dominate the sales. I mean, we've talked about this a couple of times. And when you've got something like Secret Invasion, which is doing a quarter million units, that eats up a lot of the budget for retailers and potentially for readers as well. But I don't think, because a lot of people speculate, well, that's money that's not getting spent on other comics. I don't really buy into that in so much as the aggregate sales for the top 300 are up from last month by 624,623 units, I think, from last month. So well over half a million units. So that quarter million from Secret Invasion didn't necessarily have to come from any of these other titles. Now, granted, most of these other titles did go down in sales, but that's just, again, par for the course.
Right.
Now, one that's interesting, we've got two issues of Noble Causes here on the list at ranks 285 and 292. And issue 32 was that new direction they were going in and kind of moving it forward 5 years. And it seemed to drop by about 10.5% from issue 32 to 33, which, given that that's kind of sort of, I don't want to say a first issue of sorts, but to an effect it was, that was not too bad of a drop. And it puts it kind of back on track with how it had been. In other words, it got that bump for issue 32 because it was at 3,364 units with issue 31, bumped up to 3,656 for issue 32, and then down to 3,272 for issue 33.
I'd be interested to understand whether there were any retailer incentives on number 32. Because if 32 and 33 are both on this list, that means they both were ordered, you know, and came out so close to one another that there's probably very little reorder activity happening or order adjustment activity based on the true sales of 32 for 33. So this drop is just standard. I'm going to buy extra of 32 for whatever reason.
I don't know if Image has the final order cutoff process. Even if it did, that's usually a three-week process, and these came out 2 weeks apart. So even though they were ordered a month apart, yeah, the retailers did not have a time to gauge how well issue 32 did and adjust 33, either up or down, in accordance.
Right.
By and large, with a lot of these, we're seeing drops, but, you know, 60 issues here, 100 issues there, 100 units there, 20 units here, you know, that kind of a thing. Nothing for any individual title, by and large, that makes me think, oh, wow, this thing's in free fall. I mean, even Youngblood number 3, which is down 13.39% from the second issue, it's a little bit harsher of a drop than standard for a third issue, but not by that much, only by about 2 or 3%. And given that it's Youngblood and that doesn't have a great reputation, that's not too bad. Rank 197, we've got that first issue of Wild Cards from Dable Brothers, which did 7,709 copies. And given that it's got a strong, you know, foundation in the novels and stuff, that seems, on the one hand, kind of low. On the other hand, back half of previews, not too low for that. You know, it all depends what kind of measuring stick you're using. If this had come out from, I was going to say like Wildstorm from DC or something, but hell, even then it probably would have done the same. If it had come from a publisher in the front half of previews that had some buzz or something going for it, this could have easily sold probably three times what it did. But about the only place I can think of where it would have kind of fit and done that would have been, say, Top Cow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even the Wildstorm titles are not that much above where that Wild Cards did. You know, DC's really got to do something, both in terms of how their mainstream titles are doing, but also kind of getting both Vertigo and Wildstorm back on track. Not that I think the Vertigo sales are at the panic level, because they've certainly got the trade paperbacks, which they tend to do fairly well in, to compensate. But they really need to be countering the impression that a lot of readers seem to be getting that, you know, they're in free fall for both of those imprints. Because while they're not lighting the charts on fire, they're really not doing a whole hell of a lot worse than a lot of other titles from, you know, either the mainstream DC or Marvel, for that matter. It just seems to be, particularly right now with Vertigo, there's no strong flagship title. I would argue Hellblazer should fit that role, but nobody seems to really talk that much about it. It doesn't have the buzz that Swamp Thing had back in the day, or Sandman, or, you know, some of the other ones. Why The Last Man, for that matter.
Right. Well, I think with Hellblazer, it's just been around for so long, it gets taken for granted to some extent.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it definitely does, because it's at issue 243 on this chart with 11,955 units, which not bad. And that's actually up about 42 units from the previous issue. And that, I mean, that's at rank 150. So it's pretty much dead center of the list, which, given how much comes out every month, being in the dead center of the top 300 is not too bad.
Right. Overall, it's promising that, you know, the health of Marvel at least is on the upswing, which I'm going to attribute to the fact that if you come up with a good story, that I think we talked about this also before, the concept is relatively easy to bring across. And you look at both Civil War, World War Hulk, and Secret Invasion, you don't have to spend 10 minutes explaining what the heck this series is about, right? You look at Countdown, I don't think anyone even knows what the heck that series was about,
you know, and
to
it's
this
over.
Day,
yeah.
And it's over. And, you know, Final Crisis, you know, without a degree in DC Universeology, it's going to be really difficult to explain the high concept of that one. Plus, DC tends to put more of a shroud of secrecy around these things, which is good from one respect that they want to surprise the readers. But, you know, if you don't have the readers there because you keep things under wraps for too long, you know, that's, you know, there's a give and take there.
Well, I see where you're coming from on that. And I am in complete agreement that the Marvel events have that high concept pitch line, both for Civil War, World War Hulk, Secret Invasion, that is a nice quick soundbite level, here's what it's about, that the DC events have completely lacked. But the question also comes down to, does Marvel just market their stuff better? Now, part of that is having a marketable product, which, again, that quick synopsis pitch line or whatever, I think, is a large part of. But in addition to having that for Civil War and Secret Invasion, Joe Quesada got on the Colbert Report and pitched the book to people. You know, I'm not seeing DC doing that kind of advertising. And, I mean, this goes back to your comment about how they keep stuff kind of close to the vest and under wraps. But I guess I see it as two problems, not just one. You've got marketable items at Marvel that are easy to digest the concept of, whereas you don't at DC. And Marvel is taking those things and putting them out, letting people know about them, getting the word out, and, you know, in high-profile places in some cases. Whereas, I mean, for Final Crisis, DC really hasn't been doing much of anything, even in the house ads.
Yeah. You know, Stephen Colbert's got that Captain America shield on his wall. You know, how come they don't, like, go over and, you know, get Dan DiDio on there and, like, hand him Superman's cape or something, for God's sake? You know, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, compete. Don't just sit there and let it wash over you.
Yeah, if they have a big, you know, Superman emblem or something they can put on the wall or something that just happens to block the shield or something and say, oh, it stands for Steven, you know? Yeah, they could do tons there. You know, I got to wonder how much of it is a lack of marketing on DC's part and how much of it is a lack of marketable stories on DC's part. Because even the couple of things they've got that are doing fairly well, like Geoff Johns on Justice Society, his work over on Green Lantern, his work on Action Comics, they're not really hyping all that much.
Right.
You know, there's no reason that Green Lantern right now off of the Sinestro Corps War couldn't be selling 10, 20,000 more units. You know, I don't know which side of that equation is the bigger problem for DC. I think they've got problems on both parts of it. You know, they completely need to rethink how they're doing their house ads. I've grown very tired of this either Where's Waldo thing that they did for Countdown. I'm trying to remember if they did that for 52. No, that was just Countdown with those two pictures where you've got to kind of surmise what everything means. And then they tell you in the column a week or so before it actually hits the stories. And then you've got the quasi-motivational posters for upcoming storylines.
Well, I mean, and that's given that you're even reading the Dan DiDio column at the back of the thing the week before. You know, I would argue that the only people who are even going to see that are people who are reading the comics anyway, so they would have probably been buying that event regardless. You know, they're not getting that word out to Joe public. who you got to figure, I really don't think the public that comic shops are going to be sitting on 200,000 copies of Secret Invasion. I think they're going to be selling, you know, the majority of those 250,000. You know, they're not going to be selling 50,000. They're not going to be selling 100,000. They're going to be selling 200,000 plus of those. And they might still be sitting on some issues. But that brings in – that's so much higher than the normal readership that you got to say people are coming in and buying these things.
Well, and what we saw with both Civil War and Infinite Crisis was not only did they have very high sales, they had reorders. That means there were stores that were out and needed more. So if we see reorders for Secret Invasion for this first issue next month, that implies that this $250,000 is a fairly solid number, and, you know, whatever isn't selling in some stores, you know, other stores needed more copies to compensate. You know, we've had this case in the past where this top-selling issue is doing about over twice, in this case, what the second-best item is selling. And to me, that means that comics are not reaching their full potential. There's a bigger audience out there of comic book readers than most comics are coming close to touching. You know, I certainly don't expect everyone who reads Secret Invasion to read every other book out there. But I kind of expect people who read Secret Invasion to read some other book that's out there. And I kind of question, you know, how much of this is people coming in just for the events and sitting out on kind of the month-in, month-out issues of everything else.
Yeah, that's a shame. There's some good stories being told.
Yeah. Well, like, I'm really loving what's going on in Action Comics. And for it to be selling 48,426 units surprises me. And to me, that's a shortcoming of the marketing, because I think what's going on in Action is potentially more of a lead-in for some of the Final Crisis stuff than Countdown was. There was a comment that Brian from Cryptographic put on our forum about our discussion last month on the numbers, where we had said where Countdown was doing around 68,000, that was pretty good sales. And he's like, are you kidding? This, and that wasn't exactly what he said, but his comment was along the lines of, is 68,000 really good sales or not, or have things just sunk so low that the bar is that low? And yeah, the bar is that low. You know, if you can do 65,000 units and be right at that kind of rank 25 mark, you're doing well compared to everything else. Now, you're not doing well compared to the $250,000 for a top-selling thing like Secret Invasion, but damn, most of the stuff is doing so far below 60,000-70,000 units. It's very depressing at times, actually.
Well, I'd say there's a lot of people out there who are looking at that 63,000 and are saying, wow. And I'm not talking about just small things. I mean, you got a lot of Vertigo books that are selling under 10,000 units. And that 63 is looking pretty darn attractive, I'll bet, to a lot of those folks.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. Because when you figure the average sales for a title this month, taking the sum total for the top 300, dividing by 300, you wind up at 22,368 units, which, decent sales. But then you look at the median sales, where that halfway point on the list is, and now you're down at 11,920 units. That means half the items on this list, 150 of them, sold 11,920 units or less. You know, and that 22,368 is the equivalent of about rank 97.5, if you will. It falls between Walking Dead and Birds of Prey. At 97 and 98. So, you know, two-thirds of the list is selling below average. And, you know, that's not surprising, because not everything can be the top-selling item. But there's just such a gap between that average and that top-selling item that's selling 10 times the average that I gotta think there's something that could be done to get readers to try out new titles, get stores to try out new titles for that matter. And, you know, instead of going for the quick buck on the surefire gimmick, you know, this month from a publisher, if the publishers would just try to be slowly building up the sales on titles and playing more of the long game than the short game. But, I mean, that hasn't happened yet. I don't think it will happen. And certainly when they have successes like Secret Invasion, There's no reason for them to try anything but what works, and even though it's working just in the short term. This is good for the next 7 months for them, but, you know, come 8 months from now, or after they've gotten the next seven issues out, I should say, which hopefully is one a month, they've lost this this quarter million sale, and they've got to have something to replace it. You know, and the only way they're going to do that is with another big event. Now, again, fortunately, all these events seem to be good stories and entertaining and working for Marvel. But sooner or later, they're going to have one that just tanks. Either it's the wrong story at the wrong time, or just a bad story, or they run out of good ideas, or who knows what. And if they've got an entire line-wide event tied into something that just plummets, that's going to really hurt. You know, flip side, though, not only did Secret Invasion top the comic chart, it also topped the trade chart because they were smart enough to get the Secret Invasion Infiltration trade out at this point, too, which it's kind of rare for an event to top both lists simultaneously.
And that's really reprinting a lot of the precursor stuff running up towards Secret Invasion.
Right, right.
Which is actually smart because if people first discover this whole thing with Secret Invasion number one, they don't want to have to go track down all these separate issues from all these different series. Boom, here's this trade. You interested in Secret Invasion? Here. Here's all the background that's been getting dropped into Marvel books for the last 6 or 7 months. And very smart.
And they had them both come out on the same day. I mean, that was just brilliant because they were going to get racked pretty much next to each other in a lot of stores. I mean, that's one where the editorial and the marketing worked well together. So, and, you know, we've already seen some pretty strong bumps, like with Ms. Marvel last month with the Secret Invasion tie-in. I suspect we'll see that going forward on some of the others. That once all of this gets collected, I mean, it's going to be top on the charts on the comic side for a couple of months, and then it gets collected, it'll top the charts over on the trade side. It's a win-win both now and later, so I just think DC needs to really look at what they're doing, figure out what's working both for them and for their competitors, and kind of rethink their game plan. Because, yeah. I mean, you've got the high concept pitch of Shapeshifters Invade for Secret Invasion compared to the high concept pitch of It's Yet Another Crisis for Final Crisis. Of course people are going to flock to Secret Invasion. I just think that when you look at how the average DC title is doing, and it's getting in that, you know, 20,000 to 30,000 to 40,000 range for a lot of these, whereas the Marvel ones seem to be a little healthier overall. If DC doesn't come out of Final Crisis in a strong position, at least creatively, even if not sales-wise, but something that at least has some critical acclaim behind it, that stigma may hurt them for a while.
Right.
So I certainly think Countdown has set the stage.
Hopefully Final Crisis is really going to pull it out. Now, another thing with the Final Crisis, though, like we're moving away from talking about the numbers, but sorry. There's all these tie-in series. And, you know, the same thing's happening on Marvel, by the way. If you look at the solicits, there's something like 6 or 7 Secret Invasion tie-ins. You got Secret Invasion X-Men, Secret Invasion Spider-Man, Thor, Runaways, you know, all kinds of FF, Frontline, all different kinds of Secret Invasion tie-ins. Final Crisis, tons of Final Crisis tie-ins. You got the Rogue's Revenge, you've got the Requiem, you've got, you know, everything starting with an R.
Worlds. Yeah.
Yeah, the Legion one. And the difference that I see there is it's unclear to me how these Final Crisis ones, again, with the air of mystery around Final Crisis, really don't know what is going to be in most of these Final Crisis tie-in series.
Well, but
they are relatively mysterious about them, and that's not the best way to sell to store owners.
No, it's a horrible way to
sell. When you're coming off of Countdown.
Well, it's a horrible way to sell to store owners or to readers, because you've got to figure, particularly after Countdown, people are going to be a little gun-shy. But you also look at the titles for the crossover, or the spin-off series, I should say, from DC and from Marvel. With DC, it's whatever the franchise is and some subtitle, story title or whatever. That's what they did with Countdown Arena, Countdown Lord Havoc and the Extremists, Countdown Search for Ray Palmer. Whereas over on Marvel, what they've done for World War Hulk, Civil War, and now they're doing for Secret Invasion, colon, who the hell it's starring? Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, Young Avengers, Runaways, whatever you've got there. And you already know from the first part of the title, hey, it's part of this big event that I'm enjoying. And from the second part of the title, hey, these are characters I like. I should go get this. Whereas you're right, the title itself on the DC side, Requiem or whatever, it's like, oh, what the hell's that going to be about? Who the hell's going to be in it? You know, at least Legion of Three Worlds, yeah, you've got an idea what it's going to be. But that's also one that the name itself, I think, is going to scare people off, thinking it's going to require you that degree in DC Universology that you were mentioning.
There was a very interesting renaming or rewriting of history, because the solicit for this month and I'm pulling up the DC solicits that are online here, and we've got a link to that on the forum, by the way. You have to pop down, but the Salvation Run trade that's being solicited, they're now calling it, let me find it here.
Is that the one they tacked the Justice League name onto?
Yeah, it's now Justice League JLA colon Salvation Run.
Yeah, that's... I almost will say that's Dirty Pool or whatever. It's like, come on. You know, don't... Renaming it like that is a cheap sales ploy that's probably going to be fairly ineffective. I don't think you're going to fool anyone in the short term on that. Long term, probably will, because people will forget. And it's almost a bait and switch, because they're going to pull that off a shelf 5 years from now, thinking, oh, it's a Justice League story, I'll pick it up. They're going to read it, and it's like, where the hell's the Justice League?
Well, the Martian Manhunter's hidden in there somewhere, and every now and again you'll see a JLA person, but it's certainly not a Justice League story.
Yeah.
I'm just having some trouble with DC lately.
Well, looking at these numbers, you're not the only one. You know, if we look at the total sales, again, for DC, in terms of dollars, they pulled in $6,616,994.12 at full cover price. Now, granted, DC doesn't get all that because the retailers get a discount. Some retailers give discount to readers, whatever, whatever. But that's a far cry from the $10,786,453.74. I need to put this in a bigger font, damn it. So yeah, $10,786,453.74. I mean, that's a $4 million difference just in 1 month, and only a difference of about six items released with Marvel and DC that month, with Marvel coming out on top. So a lot of people, I think, are
right.
Are just not coming for the DC stuff where they're coming for the Marvel. And I think a lot of it is Marvel's doing a lot of things right creatively. They've got some good stories coming out. They've got some good creators on some excellent titles. But they also have better brand recognition. I think people think better of Marvel right now than they do of DC. And, I mean, this is a huge credit to Joe Quesada, because you look back at the Bill Gemmis days at Marvel, and they could do no right editorially. You know, anytime they would say anything, people would just, you know, shake their head and think, you know, my God, what are they doing? Whereas, you know, a few years back, DC was really hitting their stride creatively, doing some good stuff, and now the situation is reversed. It seems like DC is really floundering right now, whereas stuff's really kind of gelled overall for Marvel. You know, even Amazing Spider-Man is pretty much top on the chart for them, although there's a bit of a gap between some of the issues this month, and we've talked about that with Chris Johnson from the Amazing Spider-Cast. And that was something that, coming out of One More Day, had gotten probably the most negative reaction than anything Marvel's done lately. So I think it's going to be very interesting over the coming months to watch how the events going head-to-head do with Secret Invasion and Final Crisis. Gut feeling, Secret Invasion's going to blow the doors off Final Crisis. It will also be, you know, kind of fun to watch how Trinity does, both compared to 52 and Countdown, and compared to, say, Amazing Spider-Man, which is in the thrice monthly format. And just, you know, if we're going to see a bit of a shakeout on some of the lower selling DC titles.
Well, on that topic, I'm just curious whether DC is going to be driving a stake through the heart of those books with this proliferation of Final Crisis spinoffs. because if the DC fans are going to go out and drop their money into Final Crisis and feel like, oh, I want to buy these pile of Final Crisis crossovers, are they going to then abandon a lot of the lower tier DC books in droves?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think the only title of the mainstream DC universe that really is at risk in that regard is Birds of Prey, because most of the titles selling below that, Blue Beetle would be the other one, actually. Most of the titles selling below that point, and Birds of Prey right now is at 22,175 units for issue 117, and that's in rank 98. Stuff selling below that is by and large either Wildstorm, Vertigo, or just non-mainstream DCU. Or if it is DCU, it's already been canceled, it's a miniseries that's going to end, or it's, say, Blue Beetle. Because really, the only other title they have mainstream DCU would be Jonah Hex, which is kind of a special case. In other words, I think they have different expectations and requirements out of Jonah Hex than they have of some of these other titles, like Alden Atom and stuff.
I think Jonah Hex is safe just on the standpoint of people who are buying Jonah Hex are buying it because they want to read Jonah Hex standalone stories, and that's not gonna, they're not gonna get pulled off that for Final Crisis. So fair enough. I think there's already been somewhat of a shakeout with, you know, Catwoman and Adam and a lot of these other books already being announced for cancellation.
But we're getting to the point where titles that are gonna start to shake out, if any do, would be Birds of Prey, Robin, Legion, Nightwing, Supergirl, and a few of these I think are high enough that they're kind of safe for now, but it's disheartening that the ones that would seem to be the next batch to drift down to that danger zone are fairly named characters and teams. You know, we're not talking about, gee, how the hell did they get this title anyways type people, you know.
Has Checkmate been officially ended yet?
You're right. That's the other one. I think it has not been that way yet. They've just put Bruce Jones, I think, as the new writer. But with issue 25 being down at 15,853 units, that's the next one to go. And I hate to say that. I'm kind of enjoying the title. I've always loved the concept.
Simon Dark, too. I don't think they've formally announced on Simon Dark.
That one I don't really consider to be a DC Universe title, even though it nominally takes place in there. That's one that I hope if it goes away from DC that somebody else picks it up.
Yeah, I'm just not thinking that they're... Since it is a DC title, it's not a Wildstorm title, it's not a Vertigo title, it's hard to tell editorial-wise what they're doing as far as cutting them any kind of slack whatsoever.
Well, that was one that I think, I don't want to say they messed up how they launched it, but they certainly messed up where they positioned it. This is having the same basic problem that Fallen Angel had, which led to IDW picking it up. Of it's neither fish nor fowl. It wasn't a Vertigo book, but it's Vertigo-ish, and it's in the DC universe, but not really a DC universe book in both of these cases. So, you know, either if you're going to launch another book like this or you're going to continue with Simon Dark, you know, for DC, what they need to do is editorially either integrate it and make it feel like part of the DC universe or cut it loose, not have it in there. You know, this is kind of a floating in that bubble between, you know, the edge, on the edge of the DC universe, and things in that area just don't sell well. A lot of people aren't picking it up because they're afraid it may get, you know, intertwined with all the other Batman stuff. And people who are getting it because they think it should be intertwined with the Batman stuff are probably not getting it anymore because it isn't. You know, it's just poorly positioned. I'm surprised they made that mistake again.
Yeah, makes no sense. We've talked about it before. There were some very simple things that they could have done to really fix that, and they just didn't.
Yeah. Over on the Marvel side, the only thing that really looks to be in that danger zone, and we should know potentially very soon now if it's going to get ended, is Marvel Comics Presents. Issue 8 is in slot 140 with 13,627 units, and I think, you know, we've been saying for a while, if it goes past issue 12, that'll be kind of surprising. I just don't think the monthly frequency is a good fit for that kind of anthology book. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or fewer items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Athlogic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.